All right. Hello, everybody. Hello. Hello and welcome. Really happy to have you here today with me and excited about today's special session. This is going to be really great. So we are here. We're lucky to have my own CPA, Deepa. And now I'm going to try to pronounce the last name. All right. Let me give it a try. Ramachandran. Ah, all right. Deepa Ramachandran. All right. Awesome. So Deepa is actually in Illinois, and today she is going to talk about money matters. Set yourself up for success. So basically, she's going to teach you how to manage and track your money and, really plan for taxes, anything to do with money, savings goals, joint finances, etc. So, and just a little bit of background on Deepa. So, Deepa has owned her own CPA firm since 2008, and she serves clients in the Chicagoland area and in 32 other states. Wow. She focuses on building long-term client relationships through customized solutions in accounting, taxes, payroll, and prioritizing excellent customer service. So, welcome, Deepa. We're really excited to have you here.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here. This is one of my favorite things to do, is to talk to women about money.
Money, yes. All right, so I tell you what, Deepa, I'm going to turn it on over to you. So I'm going to mute myself and let you just take over.
Right, thank you so much. Hi everybody. Welcome here today. I am so excited to talk to you all about turning every single one of you into a wealthy woman. So, my journey with money started, I think, when I was maybe 5 or 6. I come from a family of accountants. And to say that I'm the fourth, no, I'm definitely the third generation accountant. I don't know if my great granddad was officially an accountant or not, but that's where it started. So, this has been coded into our genes forever. And, I could read a balance sheet before I learned how to read, romance novels. And that's the thing we do when we're 13, 14, right? But I could read a balance sheet before that. So that just shows how long I've been in this field. And this, a lot of this stuff just comes second nature because my parents were very conscious about talking to me, a woman, about money and making sure that the way I approached money was normal. Like it shouldn't have been an abnormal thing. Now, unfortunately, a lot of us as kids were raised to believe that the man is in charge of the money, and we're not. So sometimes we feel like we don't have the skills to approach it. Most of the time I talk to women, the answer is, well, I don't know what I'm doing, or I feel really dumb when I do this, or numbers are not my thing. I beg to disagree with all of you. It is a learned skill. Managing money, dealing with money is a learned skill. Yes, everybody needs help. Nobody's asking you to be a CPA, but just as far as dealing with the money, day to day, managing, looking at it, keeping an eye on it, none of that is really something that can't be learned, something that can't be acquired, something that you can't grow into. So that I want to assure you that that part of it is kind of simple. I guess the CPA side of it. So, making a profit and loss account from your numbers, that takes having to go back to school, get a degree, etc. So that's not what's being asked of you. What's being asked of you is to just approach your business, look at your numbers, kind of start getting used to it. So what I hope to do in this next hour is to just give you an idea of how to approach money, where to start, what are the standard steps that we follow, the standard steps that I follow whenever I get a new client in the door. So the steps are same across the board, whether it's a male business owner, a female business owner, the steps are all the same. And it's a good guideline on how you can approach your own business. And I have 4 steps. It's a 4-step process. And at any time, if anyone has questions relevant, please stop me, ask me a question if you'd like. Otherwise, there's going to be I've left a few minutes at the end, quite a few minutes at the end for anyone to just step in and ask questions at that point. So let's get started. I have two branches in my business. I have a CPA firm and I have a financial coaching side. So the way I approach a client is to kind of bring the whole thing in together, if possible, the coaching and the accounting. And some clients come to me just for one part of one little thing. Some clients come to me for the whole thing. So I'm going to give you the holistic overall view, and so that you can get an idea, and then we'll go from there. So four steps to a wealthy woman. Step number one is always getting an idea of exactly where you are right now. So this involves two things. It involves your joint finances. If you are in a relationship, if you're married or you have a significant other, you have some kind of joint finances. And the second part is your business. Now, everyone here, I'm assuming, is a business owner, and you have you're starting, or you're midway, or you have an existing well-functioning business already. So your business finances are definitely separate. They are done separately. They are dealt with separately. All the tax deductions are on the business end. So it's very important to treat that separately, like a separate person. Then your joint finances, that is your personal finances. Your business should ideally be feeding money into your personal life, into your joint finances. If you are coupled, or if you are single, then your business should be feeding money into your personal lifestyle. It's very important to look at these two separately. Why do I keep stressing it? Because none of the government agencies like it when you combine everything. So typically when you're starting up, most people just tend to start charging. If you have a client, wonderful, charge for your services. But they don't pay attention to where that money goes. It's very important to have an LLC or a corporation set up. If you're making more than $10,000 a year, it's very necessary to have a formal business set up. Now, is it a corporation? Is it an LLC? That's a more detailed conversation. It's a more detailed conversation with your legal expert and with an accountant jointly together to figure out what's the best for your particular life situation. But it's important to have that entity set up. Once you have that set up, then you have a bank account attached to that entity, and you have all your business money flowing into that entity. Super, super important from a legal perspective. It's super important to separate that out, because you don't want anyone from your personal side being able to get to that money without your permission. Secondly, the government has a lot more requirements from you when you are a business. So it's important to, again, separate business finances from your personal. Make sure you don't mix them up together. So step number one involves a lot of taking stock. Now, once you've figured out, okay, here's my business, here's my personal stuff, you have to start listing everything that you have. So it's important to know, how many bank accounts do you have and where are you accounting for it? It's important to know what your assets are. What are the big things that you own and where are they listed? How are they titled? It's important to know, do you have a profit and loss account and a balance sheet for your business? Do you have some kind of business accounting? So anyone who walks in the door, this is where I get started with them. I look at their business records and then I immediately set them up on these various platforms. You've got to know what your business profit is. You've got to ideally know that every quarter, or at the very least every year, because without that, you're not gonna know how much taxes you're gonna owe at the end of the year. So all this is part of step one. It's part of taking stock where you are right now. Okay? Once we've got that all set up for you, there's a lot more to it. And if anyone wants me to go into more detail, just stop me and let me know. But that's the overall step. Once we've got that in place, we move on to step two, which is set up your financial goals. And we're gonna work backwards. So most people start their goal setting process saying, okay, well, I want to make 100,000 this year, or I want to make 250,000 this year. And I actually beg to take a different perspective on that. I want, especially women, to start out with what they want to take home and then work backwards. So my suggestion would be, if you want to take home 100,000, work backwards, say, I want my net to be 100,000, and hence I'm going to spend maybe another 50,000 in business expenses. I want to put away maybe 10,000 into a savings account. I want to put away another 30,000 into a retirement account. And hence, I need to actually make 190 in order to take 100,000 home. Now, when you start thinking of this in the reverse manner, it opens up a lot more avenues for you that you probably didn't think about before. Because when you say, okay, I want to make six figures, I want to make 100,000, what we don't realize is what it costs us to make the 100. We have to pay people, we have to pay subscriptions, we have to pay for software, we have to pay taxes. And once we're done with all that, we end up with maybe 40 or 50, half of what we started out with. And then what happens is we are unhappy because, well, life is a lot tighter financially than we thought. It's a lot tighter than what we want. We find we don't have spending money. We find we start running up credit card debt at that point. So doing the reverse, starting out with your net number and then working your way backward from there gives you a much better perspective on what you're going for. You can reset your goals and make them more lined up with your lifestyle. And I found that when women start doing this exercise this way, you're more motivated. You're more motivated because you're looking at a debt-free lifestyle. You're looking at being able to have that play money. I call it play money. I mean, I don't know if you all have different words for it, but that's that, you know, that $1,500 extra per week that I get to do whatever I want. If I want to go, I stopped drinking Starbucks, so that's not what I do. But if I want to go get an ice cream or eat out or just have a lunch by myself, I don't have to think about it because I've reset my goals in a very different way, okay? So working backwards, very, very essential. Once we've gotten you through that exercise, you've set your goals, you've thought about it, okay, you've realized I want 100,000 net every year. In order for that, I have to make about 190 in order to get to a net number, take home number of 100,000. Once you've figured that part out, the next step, which I think is the most important step, is working on your mindset while we create the plan for that 100,000 take home. Now, this step three is the most detailed step. Step one takes a little bit of time, and step two takes a little bit of time, but step three is really where the messy stuff happens. Now, as you all know, growth, there's this thing called growing pains. Growth involves a lot of mindset work. Now, this year especially, it's been very challenging with COVID. I think even just our general day-to-day life mindset has been affected by what this pandemic has brought out. And for us especially this year, it was very challenging because a significant part of my business is in the brick and mortar side. So we had to stop clients from coming in to see us, and we weren't equipped to work in this virtual environment, especially not with taxes and especially not with IRS closed. So this year was a pretty severe hit on my mindset. I mean, I just, in an instant, because didn't we like close down in one day? I mean, in our state, in Illinois, definitely, the governor just ordered everybody to close tomorrow, and we had to close tomorrow. And we were one day away from the corporate tax deadline. And to say that I was devastated was just not even, it doesn't even begin to describe it. It was so frustrating to see how much mindset had work had to go into it to just get over that barrier. So I'm sure we've all had our issues with mindset, but when you get to step three, once you've got your goal defined, and now you're going to put steps into place to make this goal work, this is where I say the disappearing happens. This is when clients stop calling me. This is, you know, this is when I have to kind of go check in on people, because your mindset comes into play. Now you've got these beautiful numbers in front of you. You've decided you want 100,000 take home. And then the reality of it starts to hit you. The imposter syndrome kicks in. For most women, the first thing that I come across is imposter syndrome. It's like, oh my God, how am I going to make that happen? I'm not good enough. Am I going to be able to do that? Who's going to buy from me? All those things start kicking in. And they kick in a different, you know, they kick in different ways in different stages. Once you cross the 100,000 mark, when you get to 250, you start worrying about whether you're going to be able to handle these employees that you have. Are they going to listen to me? You know, my entire team is older than me. I'm the youngest in my team. And for me, that was a severe mindset for a long time, is how am I going to be able to tell these people to work? Like, are they going to listen to me? All these things factor into mindset, whether we realize it or not. But one of the biggest ones is when you start earning money, you're going to start hitting up against what I call the money thermostat issue. I think it's T. Harv Eker, who talks about it. And what he says is everybody has, it's your money earning limit is like a thermostat. It's so in, you know, winter, we set our thermostats at 70. And if the temperature goes higher, thermostat kicks in and it shuts off. And if the temperature goes lower, it kicks back in to maintain an even pace of 70 as the temperature in the room. And he says that your money earning number is also the exact same. So if your thermostat says you earn 50,000, doesn't matter how much you bring in, you'll end up at 50. You'll either create bills to pay or you'll create financial emergencies, but you'll always end up at 50. So at this stage, we work very hard on our mindset. We work hard on being enough. We work hard on our thought processes. We work hard on just paying attention to how we think every day. And some of the ways we're raised to be good girls, we're raised to not create commotions. Whatever it is, every single one of those factors plays into step three, okay? One of my favorite books on this concept is The Big Leap by Gay Hendricks. And he talks about upper limiting, which is pretty much the same thing. If you've had a record month, that's the time to really pay attention to your money, because if you've upper limited yourself and you suddenly think, who am I to have a $25,000 a week? That's when you really need to pay attention that you don't somehow figure out a way to spend it all and leave yourself with nothing. So these are very, very common things that happen at this stage, okay? So a lot of attention is given to mindset. I had my own share of mindset issues as my business was growing. And so I've heard a lot of it. I haven't heard everything, but I've heard a lot of it. I've seen a lot of it happen. I've seen bills show up from nowhere when somebody's hit their upper limit. So I've seen all of it happen. So working on mindset is key critical at this point. In addition, here is where we really define how are you going to pay yourself? Because now you've got your goal. You've got your take home number is 100,000. Now we get into the real nuts and bolts of it. Okay, how are we going to break up that 100,000? How much of that is going to be a payroll? Because the government requires that you have a paycheck as a business owner, okay? Your company is hiring you as an employee. You need to get paid. So we're gonna figure out how to pay you. That net number, it gets divided in some way. And these are all based on your individual lifestyle. So it's also based on average salary range for someone who does the kind of work you do. A lot of thought goes into that. With that payroll, that's how we pay in taxes. Now, if you're netting $100,000 a year, you're gonna owe some taxes. Generally, it's between 20 and 25% goes to taxes at that income range. We're going to make sure you've either got that set aside or you're paying that in throughout the year, and your payroll is a perfect way to pay that in. Then we're going to start talking. Once we've got you on that routine, we're going to start talking about a 401k plan, a retirement plan, because that is the fastest way to save money on taxes and keep more of your money for yourself. And that wealthy woman archetype, that wealthy woman has a lot of 401k savings. because that's something that you don't pay tax on now, and it grows tax-free. Now, just think about this for a second. If you're in the 22% tax bracket, which is what the average American person is in the 22% tax bracket. If you're in the 22% tax bracket, if you live in a state like mine, our state taxes are 5%. 22 plus 5, 27. So you're paying 27% in taxes, plus Social Security, Medicare, all that other stuff, we're gonna round it up to 30. For every dollar you earn, you're paying 30 cents in taxes. Okay, that's just the reality that we live in. Now, if you have a 401k plan and you put money into there, you are allowed to put the entire dollar into the 401k plan without paying the 30 cents of taxes. So to me, that's a 30% return on your money. That's money you don't have to give the government, you get to keep for yourself. And the best part of it is that money, that $1 grows tax-free. You don't have to pay tax as you invest that money. So that's how wealth is built. Wealth is built pre-tax. It is built before taxes are paid. And my goal with all my clients is for them to keep as much of their money as possible. Now, it takes a while to get to this place. I mean, a lot of times we get stuck on step one. We just get stuck on figuring out our P&Ls and just, you know, getting a list of debt and just working. We get stuck in that. And my goal is always to move everybody off of there to get to the meat and potatoes where we can really work on creating wealth. So there's, oh, sorry, I missed a couple of questions. The name of the book, Suzanne, I think that was when I was talking about Gay Hendricks' book. It's called The Big Leap. I'm just gonna type that in there. It's one of my favorite books and I read it at least once every couple of years. And should we open a retirement account connected, associated with our business? Jen, definitely, 100%. Retirement accounts are not ever joint. They're always individual. They're always in one person's name, okay? And you can assign beneficiaries to that. So yes, definitely you want a retirement account associated with the business. And for that, important to have business accounting, important to have a business structure like an LLC or S Corp, important to have a payroll. These are the three precursors before you can get a retirement account set up. Okay, so definitely keep that in mind. So in this stage, we talked about getting you a payroll, paying in your taxes. And then the other thing that we talk about here, because once you've started hitting the six figures, you're going to start thinking about assistants. You're going to have to think about people to help you run the business, people who will take your vision and bring it to life the way you want to, okay? Because you're the boss. You get to tell people how you want. If somebody is coming to work with you, you get to express to them what your vision is and they get to follow it. That comes at a cost. Now, typically, a typical business can allocate a third of its money towards payroll costs, towards labor costs. So a typical business with sales of about 200,000, you can afford to set aside about 60,000 of that for help, for people you pay to help run the business. That's okay. What I've noticed for online businesses though, that was for brick and mortar businesses. What I've noticed for online businesses is that with virtual assistants and things like that, this cost structure is changing a little bit. And I've noticed that for online businesses, you are actually able to keep your payroll costs down to about 15%, which is amazing. It's a real blessing. It's an opportunity there that you have that other businesses don't have. The other opportunity that you also have is you don't have this thing called rent. Like for me, for example, I'm sitting in my office space. I get to, you know, write this check for this chunk of money every month to my landlord as rent. When you're working out of your house, you're working virtually, you don't have that. But in place of that, what you have is potentially you have advertising costs. You have lead generation costs in the forms, all different forms, Facebook advertising, whatever. There's so many different types, but you have lead generation costs that can take the place of rent. Those should typically not exceed 10% of your sales. These are the kind of details. These are the real nitty-gritties that we get into. So when you have a snapshot of your business from a profit and loss report, total income, total expenses, we get to look at that and we get to decide, okay, you did get to your net of 100, but you spent too much to get there. And this, maybe this expense was too high. Maybe this was too low. Having labor costs that are too low is also not good. That means you're working yourself to the bone and you're getting exhausted. And so you do need the help. So it's really about finding a balance, finding that fine, that perfect spot where everything works. You get what you want, others get what they want, and your business is running really well. Cost of hiring, your S-Corp. So yeah, so this step three is the most detailed. It's where we spend the most amount of time in because it takes a while to get to the right spot. Now that you know your goals, we're working on this plan, it takes a while to put the plan together. Sometimes it takes a year or two to actually work through all the obstacles to get you where you want, where all of this stuff is autopilot. My goal for everyone is your payroll is autopilot, paying in taxes is autopilot, paying your people is autopilot, looking at your statements every quarter is just automatic, and you just do it because that's how you tend to your business. Your business is your baby, and that baby needs to get fed every day, so you work in it every day, but then you also get to sit back and assess how well it's going. That has to be done at least once a quarter. So that's step three. Now we're on step three. Sorry, Chris. Step two was just setting your goals. Okay, so step two, you know what? I'll do a recap at the end. Now, after I'm done talking, I'll just do a recap of this step. So maybe it'll make a little bit more sense at that point. And then step four is really just keeping this machine going. Now, the reason I make step four so simple is because a lot of times people are happy with where they are. After working through step three, it's gotten to the point where step three is working on your mindset and creating the plan, okay? So, and this is where we work on, this is where I talked about the book, The Big Leap. This is where we think we work on your financial thermostat. It's where we, you know, figure out how much we're going to pay you, how to pay your taxes, you know, figure out your cost of hiring, all of that. That's all done in step three. Step four is to just keep this, I call it the implementation phase. It's where we keep this machine going. Now that we've created all these steps, we've put all these processes in place, we keep that going. And we go back in, we check it, we fine tune that machine every now and then, but we keep it going. I've noticed that some people hit a certain number and they're good. They don't want to ever go back, go beyond that. So I've noticed businesses hit the 500,000 level or the 700,000 level and just be happy with that. That's all they want. They get a good net number out of it and they don't want any more. If you're in a continuous growth phase, opening multiple locations, you want to hit the million, then you want to hit the 2 million, then you want to hit the 3 million. There's no implementation phase. We're constantly rotating through the first three steps. Then we have to reassess where you are. Then we have to get you financing and funding to expand. And, you know, we're constantly working on the business. There's really no coasting phase. So that's step four. So let me just stop here 1 second and let me just go through the four steps again so that, you know, it kind of all ties in and makes sense. So step one is to take stock of where you are right now. That means getting a profit and loss account for your business. It means getting all your business data into a software and finding out exactly how much money you've made and how much money you've spent right now. It means taking a list of all your debt, looking at your joint finances, looking at how much money you take home. It's just getting a full picture of exactly where you are right now. Because I can't give any advice. Nobody can give you advice. You can't move further without, unless you know exactly where you are. So that's step one. Step two is to set your goals. So this is where I talked about, you know, most people set their sales goals. They say, okay, I want 200,000 of sales this year. I'm asking you to think of it differently. I'm asking you to go backwards and think about how much you want to take home. So instead of saying I want 200,000 in sales, maybe say I want 100,000 to take home and then work backwards from there. So in order to get 100,000 to take home, I'm going to have this much in taxes, I'm going to have this much in savings, et cetera, and work your way backwards to that sales number. Okay, so that's step two. Step three is now that we know where you are, now that we've gotten your goals, Step three is to create that plan and work on your mindset while we're doing that. So creating the plan involves setting up a payroll for you, figuring out how you're going to pay yourself, what you're going to pay yourself, figuring out how you're going to pay in your taxes, what those taxes are going to be. If you're going to hire, if you're going to have assistance, figuring out how much you can afford, figuring out how much you need to spend on your advertising, your lead gen, and all of that is in step three. So it takes a while to figure that out and set it up. And then step four is to keep this plan working on autopilot. So we know where you are, we've got your goals, we've set up all the processes to make those goals come true. Step four is really putting all that in place and keeping it going so that, you know, come tax time, it shouldn't be stressful. I think half the reason why taxes are stressful is because we have to gather, we have to put things together, we have to go count how much we made last year. All that should be autopilot. At tax time should just sit, you just should be sitting around and your accountant should just send you your tax return. That's my goal for most people with businesses, is all this is done during the year. And so that's really when you know your plan is implemented, is when you're not really worried about tax time. That's when your plan is really implemented in full. So those are the four steps. So I hope that recap kind of made it all fit together. I'm ahead of schedule. Okay, so talk to me, ladies. What's going on? Do you have any questions? Do you want to come on and ask me questions? Type things in. All right, so how do you know how much to pay yourself? Does an accountant help with that? You subtract that. Yeah, so that is my number one question of all time from all people, is how do you know how much to pay yourself? And a subsect of that question is, well, how do I do that? How do I pay myself? It's something that we have to work through. It's based on each individual person. So when I have a client in front of me, first of all, I need to know how much money their business is generating, how much you're spending and how much you're taking home. And then I need to know what your joint finances are. I need to know how much taxes you pay. Okay. And based on that, we will come up with a number that we're going to pay yourself. And that's going to be based on average salaries, what the IRS expects to see as a base salary number, how much Social Security, Medicare are you going to pay? And then how much taxes do you potentially have to pay in the upcoming year? All of these things are going to go into that one number. And I may not discuss that with you. I may just look at it and tell you, here's what we're going to pay you. And a lot of people are just happy with that. If you want to know all the thought process that went into it, I'm happy to explain it once I'm done with that process. But yeah, it's a lot of different steps. Now, once we figure out how we're going to pay you, I like that to include your taxes as well. I like that payroll to have taxes coming out, being submitted to the government every month. So that's not something that you have to worry about. I want that process to be automatic. So I also build that into your paying yourself process. The 401k plan is, it comes later. I need you to be paying in taxes before we think about the 401k, okay? One thing I want to point out here is right from when you earn $1,000, you have to get into the habit of setting aside money for taxes. Because if you don't, you're going to find yourself in what I call the never-ending tax loop, which means if you go a whole year, you've made $70,000, $80,000, and you haven't paid in any taxes, the following April, you're going to owe about $15,000, right? So that $15,000 is going to come out of next year's income because you haven't saved any of this, right? So it's going to come out of next year's income. But what you have to realize is you've already started earning income next year and you haven't paid any taxes for that year. You're paying last year's taxes. So you're going to go another year without paying taxes and you're going to go in this forward loop of paying this year's taxes next year. And that loop never ends and you're always going to be in a bind and you're always going to be behind. So it's important that right when you start earning money, you start setting aside, start with 20%. Set aside 20% for your taxes and just pay that in as you go. And that way you'll find that you're not suffering when it comes to tax time. So, well, I hope that answers your question. Let me know if you want more details on it. And I'm going to apologize ahead of time. My answer as an accountant is always going to be, it depends. It depends is my standard answer, or I'm going to need a lot more information to answer that question. So that those are two standard answers that I have to give, just because, you know, this field is so individualized. Your tax situation is going to be so different from someone else's. So while I can explain the general theory for you specifically, it will be a very individualized answer based on your current situation. So Jen says, have you read Profit First? And what do you think of that model? I love it. I love Profit First. Personally, I think Mike Michalowicz, I think he made that a little too complex for the average person. Okay, I'm an accountant and I had trouble getting through that book. So all I'm going to say is I think it works with some people's brains, and it doesn't work with, like, everybody's brain structure is different, and it works very well for some people and it doesn't work so well for others. I like the concept. The concept is pay yourself first, right? So profit first, meaning pay yourself first. And that's part of my step two, which is when we set your goals, we start with what you want to take home. So I've kind of used that model, but not exactly. So we start with what you want to take home. It's basically what he says in Profit First. He's written a whole book around it. It's very complicated. There's a much, much simpler way of doing it. But yes, I totally love that model, especially for women. Like, we've been taught that we've got to take care of the rest of the world before we take care of it. Nah, don't believe in that. Not just, you have to take care of yourself first. Then you have enough energy to take care of everyone else. So, an accountant will tell you to pay quarterly. Yeah, you know, most accountants will tell you to pay quarterly. I'm not a fan of the quarterly model. I do believe that you should be paying your taxes in every month. It's so much easier on the cash flow. It's that much less that you have to save. You know, and once it becomes a habit and you like it, you'll realize it's so much easier to get it done that way. So, but to answer your question directly, yes, an accountant can give you the calculations to pay your taxes in every quarter. It's a good way to do it. It's an IRS-approved way to do it. But there's a much simpler way to deal with it, and that is via a payroll. Just give yourself a monthly paycheck, paying the taxes every month, be done with it, set it on autopilot, and forget about it. So that's generally the way I like to do it for everyone I work with. So any other questions for me? Y'all know I can't do too specific, but I can still go reasonably. I can answer some more questions if you have it. Anything else you'd like me to go into detail? Any other topics? Leslie, have I left anything out? Is there anything? As far as, I do get lots of questions on accounting software. For those who have businesses, six-figure businesses, it's one big question that I get. I'm a big fan of two main software services, packages, whatever. I like QuickBooks the most. And the reason I like QuickBooks the most is because it integrates everything. You can put payroll inside of QuickBooks. You can connect your bank accounts. It can download. They make it really easy. I know QuickBooks comes with a bad rap. It comes with a bad rep in the market. People don't like it. They think there's a big learning curve. All those are facts. But at the end of the day, it does the job and it does it really well. So I like that one the most. My second favorite is something called Xero with an X. So it's X-E-R-O. They're kind of a new entrant into the market, but they do a pretty decent job. They don't have payroll inside, but they've teamed up with this payroll service called Gusto. And so Xero and Gusto integrate really well. And so that's my second choice. And it's only second because I have to deal with two separate logins and everything. QuickBooks is just one place to go. Everything is there. And it's been around for so long, I can work it in my sleep. So if you're having trouble with it, I can go in there and I can just fix the problem very quickly. So that's also part of the reason I like it.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yes, Suzanne, hi.
Hi. So I just got QuickBooks, Intuit, and everything, like the business bank account, the credit card, it filters right in. So am I correct in thinking that now I don't have to, like, because every year it was torture, gathering it. So is, and everything's labeled. So is my expectation now that I don't need to be checking on this like monthly, as I always thought? I mean, I probably should, but when you don't, is the info, is that the intention?
That is the intention, yes. Okay. QuickBooks is still a piece of software. So, and it runs on artificial intelligence, which is not quite close to our human intelligence just yet. So it does make mistakes. It does skip transactions and it does duplicate transactions. And one thing I will tell you is in January of 2019, QuickBooks across the world for all the clients duplicated the entire January. So while it's easy in the sense that you don't have to sit there and type in all your transactions, it will just download it. You still need a second set of eyes on it to make sure that it's not duplicating or missing things, okay? So in this sense, it's good to either do what they call a reconcile, which is right inside of QuickBooks. It's good to do a reconcile and just make sure all the transactions are there. Okay. Or, you know, hire a bookkeeper or have your accountant just look at it every quarter and make sure that it's reconciled and the numbers are good. Because you're relying on those to pay in your taxes and things like that, right? So it's really important that they're accurate. From where the software was 10 years ago, where you had to type everything in manually, we're about 65% ahead of where we used to be. So it's really doing about 65% of the work for you now, but it's not even close to doing 100% of the work. So there's still that 35% of oversight that you need. You're well ahead of the curve because all your data is in there. All you have to do is now check for accuracy. Does that answer your question? Does that make sense?
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you.
Awesome. Let's see.
Hey, Dina, this is Kara Bernstein. I just wanted to just throw in a little comment for 1 second. I don't know if other people on the call feel this way about accounting, but my first year in business, or probably it was my second year, because the first year I didn't make nothing. But anyways, the second year when I started making a little bit of money, I was really behind on all the accounting stuff because I was trying to build my business and money is not my expertise whatsoever. So what I did was I asked a friend who was an accountant if she knew another accountant that worked with small businesses that could just, I just give her my credit card statements and my receipts. And I shut my eyes and I wake up and she does this beautiful ledger and it cost me $600 for the year. So I'm just throwing it out there. Like, I think all this is so good to understand and it's really important. But if it gives you so much anxiety because you're not dealing with it because you're trying to deal with the 10,000 other parts of your business, it might be a good idea just to hire an accountant and send them all your receipts and go like that, because it really helped me tremendously and took a lot of anxiety away from me. So I just wanted to throw that out there.
No, Kara, thanks. Thank you for making that point. That's a really good point. And a lot of that I talk about in step three. These are joint decisions though, right? The decision to pay in your taxes, these kind of things have to be made with the client. Once the decision is made, yes, we want it to be on autopilot. So that's step four is just to get all this automatic. So you don't want to be worrying about the nitty gritty of recording the receipts and things like that. You want to be worrying about the nitty gritty of earning the money, allocating it to savings, allocating it to investing, setting aside enough to put in your 401k. Those parts of the money game are definitely on your plate to be thinking about consistently, having a goal, and saying, okay, if I want to take home this much, how much am I going to set aside for my 401k? Those number concepts, definitely you have to be on top of it and thinking about it consistently. How am I going to account for it? How am I going to record the sales? How am I going to actually, that work of recording and reconciling and all that, definitely hand over to an accountant. It's not worth your time and effort to be doing it. So, totally. Thank you for making that point. It makes sense. Here's another question from Jen. What's an appropriate amount to pay an account? You know what? There's going to be all kind. Again, it depends, right? So it's going to depend on really how much work there is to do. So Kara said she pays $600 a year. And that is typically how much my tax returns cost. And so when you have, say, what if you make under $10,000 or under $15,000 a year, you probably have enough transactions for me to be able to do very quickly and generate a tax return very quickly. Normally, the people who come to me have multiple six-figure businesses. You're definitely making $100,000, $200,000 and more. You have tons of transactions. And you don't have time to deal with that. You just want me to do it. I'm going to either recommend quarterly accounting or monthly accounting, depending on how many transactions. You don't want to go 3 months without looking at your transactions if you need to be on a monthly payroll. And that is something that an accountant can recommend. I personally like to start people with quarterly, but a lot of people coming to me have enough for me to just put them on monthly and go, no, I'm sorry, you're monthly. There's enough here where it's going to take me enough time to do this every month and just, you know, have you paying your taxes every month. So I can tell you what I charge. Quarterly, I start at $500 a quarter. Monthly, I start at $300 a month. So those are not too bad. You're going to find bookkeepers for slightly less than that. But what you're getting with us as an accountant is you're getting the tax part as well. I'm watching your taxes as I go. So there's no stress at the end of the year. There's no really good amount, bad amount. I know people who charge $1,000 a month for the same work that I do. Just depends where you are. You know, again, it's just the premium pricing model. This is all different pricing models, but that's going to depend. The appropriate amount is going to depend. Jen, I hope that answers your question. That's the best answer I can give you for that right now. So Barbara's saying, do you recommend a specific level of QuickBooks? So there's two types. There's a QuickBooks that's on your desktop, that sits on your desktop computer or your laptop. And then there is a QuickBooks Online, which is on the cloud. I definitely recommend online. Because then you can just add your accountant to it. You don't have to be transferring files and things like that. So you can just add users, you can add accountants. It's very simple. And once you've done that, you can hook up your banks to it. You can hook up your credit cards to it. Just downloads and a bulk of the work gets done there, which is why I can keep my price at $300 a month. I don't have to charge you more because part of the work is already done. I come in and I look at your coding. I make sure the transactions are not duplicated. I'm doing the reconciles and things like that. I'm only doing a third of the work that I would normally do on a desktop version. So definitely online QuickBooks, definitely go for that mid-level. You know, they keep changing those darn names every year. So I at this point, I don't know what it's called, but it's that mid-level. I think it's the $30 a month one, even after discounts. Plus, I think it's called Plus. Yeah, I think it's called Plus. Definitely go for the mid-level one. And that's what I recommend to everybody. And then add the payroll module onto there when you're ready for payroll. It's beautiful. So Natalie saying, I'm new to this game. Can you set up a 401k plan? Yes, you can. It's called a solo 401k. Your sole proprietor definitely needs to have a tax ID number. So, you know, you can start your business under your own name, under your social, and that's just fine. And that's when you're called a sole proprietor. 401k plans tend to get expensive. So if you're a sole proprietor, definitely just look at an IRA or there's something called a simple IRA. Start with those. Those are very low cost plans. They allow you to put aside up to $12,000 a year and work your way up to a 401k when you have an LLC, an S Corp set up, because a 401k allows you to go up to $50,000 max for the year. Okay, so as a sole proprietor, start small. I'm a big fan of keeping your costs minimal when you're starting out. And there's sole proprietors who make $1 million a year. I don't recommend it at all. But generally, when you say sole prop, I know you're talking about just starting up without too many costs. So look at something simpler, IRA or a simple IRA. Look at this, okay? In order to come up with that plan, how much to pay yourself, how much to set aside? Should we be consulting? Yes. Definitely consult with an accountant because While I can toss a number out there for you, I don't recommend payrolls less than $40,000 a year, okay? That being said, how should you pay yourself $40,000 or more? Those are all questions that you have to look at your global financial situation first. So, and in this case, let me tell you all the things I don't know. I don't know if you're married. I don't know if you have kids, because kids give you tax credits. So you really don't want to be overpaying your tax. If you have a W-2, the job on the side, if you have a spouse, how much the spouse earns. Does the spouse essentially pay all your taxes, or do you need to set aside money? I mean, there's 1,000 questions that need to be answered before we come up with that number. So yes, definitely work with an accountant, go through all those questions and come up with the right number. I'm not a fan of overpaying taxes. I am a fan of paying just the right amount, maybe a little bit more than average, so you can sleep at night. Sleep is a big thing for me, people. I can't not sleep at night, okay? So I'm gonna do my best to make sure that I'm sleeping at night, because I'm also signing your return, and that you're sleeping at night. So we pay a little bit more than what you absolutely have to pay. We don't do bare minimums in the tax world, because we wanna keep you out of the audit pool as much as possible. And being an S corp or an LLC taxed as its own return is one way of keeping you out of the audit pool. Sole props are in the biggest audit pool there is. So that's why my first job is always to get all my clients out of that audit pool, get an entity, get yourself to a different space, so IRS is not looking at you as much. Okay, now where did I? Okay, good, Jen, thank you. Barbara, thank you. Natalie, is there general income that you would recommend transitioning? Yes, there is, and I'm glad you asked, because that's my third most asked question. Wow, we're covering all my FAQs here, great. Yes, it's $50,000 in sales or profit. And the reason I say sales or profit is because sometimes some people have very little expenses. So $50,000 sales, I'm ready to have that conversation with you. Sometimes you have more expenses, so we have to look at your profit, that is your income minus your expenses. $50,000 is the magic number. That's where I start having that conversation with you. Because we're not ready to do it at that point, we start having the conversation. And let me tell you why we start having the conversation. There's two types of taxes in the USA. There's income tax and self-employed tax. Self-employed tax, every self-employed person, business owner, sole prop, whoever, pays 15.3% in taxes. Plus, you're paying income tax. And income tax is, for business owners, anywhere between 12% to 22%, maybe more. Maybe you're in the 24% bracket, maybe in the 32, whatever. We're gonna say average 22%. And then state tax. Average state tax in the USA is 4%. So we're talking about 15 plus 22, 37 plus 4, 41. As a sole proprietor, you're paying over 40% in taxes. That is not a good situation to be in. So we transition to the S corp. We get to play with that self-employed tax. We get to reduce it down significantly, and we just have to work on the income taxes with the 401k and stuff. We get to reduce the income tax considerably. So that's why I get so excited about this, is because we go from a 40% tax rate to an average of about 18 to 20%. We cut your tax bill in half, ladies. So $50,000. $50,000 is where we start doing that, because it's going to cost you. It's going to cost you to be an S corp. S corp return is three times more than a sole prop return. It's going to cost you to get your payroll done. There's a monthly fee there. There's some payroll taxes you have to pay. All that stuff costs you. $50,000 is where the savings are greater than the cost. Okay, the tax savings is greater than what it costs you to do all this work. So $50,000. yes. We all want to sleep. We all need to sleep. We're going to lose sleep because of COVID and things like that. You should not be losing sleep because of accounting and taxes. I'm very insistent on that. So yeah. Natalie says, can you clarify differences between LLC and S corp? Yes, I can give you a brief overview on that. The LLC is a box that is legal. It has nothing to do with taxes. So every state has an LLC. So in the USA, your entities are set up at state level. There's not a federal thing. It's all a state thing. So if you're setting up an LLC, you're setting it up in your own state, okay? It's a legal box. There's no such thing called an LLC tax return. You have to pick how you're going to do a tax return for the LLC, which is why it's so wonderful. I always recommend that over the S Corp. I recommend LLC for everybody. Because you can be a sole prop while it's still easier and cheaper to be a sole prop. You can switch that over to being taxed as an S Corp when you hit the 50,000 without changing entity, without setting yourself up with anything different. You can keep the same bank account. That's why I love it so much. So definitely LLC is my preferred. S Corp is the S Corp. You set it up as an S Corp and it's a rigid fixed entity and you can't change it. So there's no flexibility within it. Right from day one, you have to give yourself a payroll, whether you're profitable or not. And so it is what it is. So the difference between the two is definitely the flexibility. And as you see, I have a favorite. All right. Wow. Thank you, ladies. This is great. Lots of good questions. And I think I covered, and y'all reminded me to cover what I was missing too. So I can't hear you.
Hi, Deepa. Could I ask one more question? Sorry, it's Natalie.
Yes, please do, Natalie.
So with an LLC, can you still get those tax benefits or kind of avoid the tax penalties then that you would incur as a sole proprietor?
Yes, because the LLC defaults to the sole proprietor initially. But then what you do is when you get to that 50,000 level and you're ready to switch over, you make an election to tax the LLC like an S Corp. So that's when you do the payroll for yourself, you do the 401k, you know, and you reduce the self-employed taxes and you reduce your income taxes and everything. So yeah, you definitely can do that.
And any simple ways of going about transitioning to an LLC?
You just set one up. I mean, do you have an S Corp right now?
No, I'm just a sole proprietor.
Okay, it's very simple. It's one form that you file with your taxes and you switch from sole prop to S Corp. It's called the 2553. It's a three-page form. And you just file that with your return and then IRS sends you a letter saying you've been accepted to file taxes as an S Corp. And that's it. It's very simple.
And do you have to set up LLC stuff more and beyond the taxes or just simply that form and then you're technically an LLC?
No. Oh, sorry. I didn't get your question at first. No, sorry. To set up an LLC, you have to register with your state, okay? I recommend using an attorney, even a local attorney is fine. But if you want to do it yourself, there are like LegalZoom and things like that. My only issue with LegalZoom is that I'm not 100% sure that you get all the schedules and the operating agreements that you need. There's nothing wrong with the service. The service is great. But I'm not sure you get everything you need. So I definitely recommend going through an attorney. But you do have to register with your state. So the Secretary of State, you'll have to register with them, set up your LLC, pay the filing fee, and then you'll get the letter in the mail that you're registered. And now you're an LLC. So that's how you get the LLC. Then with that LLC, you get yourself a tax ID from IRS. And once you have the tax ID, then you can set up a bank account in the name of the LLC. So those are the steps in that order.
And you need a different tax ID. If I have a tax ID as a sole proprietor, do I need a different tax ID for an LLC then?
Yes, you do, because you just set up a new person. And every entity has a person status, is treated as its own person and gets, just like, you know, when you have a kid, you have to get a social, right? It's the same process when you set up a company, LLC, S Corp, anything, you have to get a tax ID right away.
Okay.
That's something that's generated though. Like she doesn't have to go do that before she files for an LLC, right?
She doesn't have to do anything before she files for the LLC. Yeah. The LLC is filed for first. Yeah. Once you get the LLC paperwork in the mail, then you get the tax ID, then you go get the bank account.
Okay.
So, great. So can you clarify, Deepa, just so everyone's clear? So what you're recommending is an LLC versus an S Corp. And guys, I can attest to that an LLC versus sole proprietor. If you're generating X income,
if you're making at least 10,000 in sales a year,
then go to an LLC. Okay.
It's time to get an LLC at that point.
Okay. And then the next thing then is, just so everyone's clear, is that if you're generating 50,000 or greater inside of the business, then you're recommending be an LLC, but maybe change the designation to an S-corp inside of the LLC, right?
Yeah, correct. So we call that LLC taxed as S-corp. So you're still keeping the LLC for legal liability, that's important. But from tax-wise, you're getting rid of, you know, you're reducing the self-employment tax, reducing your income tax, you're reducing a whole bunch of taxes by making it its own and filing it like it's an S-corp, but it's not exactly an S-corp.
Right. It's still under the LLC. And so you can switch if for some reason you, I don't know, have a baby and you, you know, take the year off or whatever, right? Like you can switch. Okay. So the
S-corp election is for 5 years. But if you're taking a break from your business, you can just, you know, bring everything down to a pause. Okay. And open it back up when you're ready. So yeah.
So the other question I have is around payroll. So do you only do payroll if you have an LLC with an S-corp designation?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's, so like if you're a sole proprietor or an LLC without the S-corp, you're not worrying about payroll.
You're not going to do it because you're already paying those taxes in quarterly or at the end of the year. You know, you're already paying the highest amount of self-employment tax already as a sole proprietor. As the, when you have LLC taxed as S-corp, you're using that payroll feature to pay in all those taxes, but what kind of, it's in our control. How much we pay in is in our control, so yeah.
Okay, so I'm trying to visualize how that saves in taxes.
So 15.3% is self-employment tax, okay? So say you make a profit of, I'm gonna use 100,000 because I can do that math better in my head. Say you have a profit of 100,000, so that's your take home.
Okay.
As a sole proprietor, you'll be paying 41,000 in taxes on that, okay? And as an S-corp, you'll be paying closer to 20,000 in taxes on that. That's the difference.
Okay. Okay, and it's because you, like that chunk that you pay yourself,
so it's because,
is taxed at a lower level, is that it?
Right, because you can control the self-employment tax, you only pay on your paycheck. So your payroll is not going to be 100,000. We're going to keep your payroll at 40.
Okay.
Pay the 15.3% on the 40, and you're going to pay the income tax on the rest of it. So it comes out to about 20,000.
Okay.
Instead of paying 15.3% on the 100 and all the other taxes on the 100, you know, we kind of split it up that way.
Okay, got it. So I think the big takeaway is that threshold, right? If you're at 10,000, go to an LLC.
Yes.
If you're at 50,000, do the LLC/S-corp, which is what Deepa and I just did in 2020. So finally I did that.
Yeah.
So, okay, awesome. That really helps. Let's see. I think we have another question. Yeah.
Couple. We have Emily. Does a DBA contain to a sim? Yes, it does. A DBA is just a doing business as. So generally a sole proprietor, you're doing business in your own name under your own social. A DBA just gives you kind of like a brand identity, but it doesn't mean anything from an IRS's perspective or anything. Nobody else recognizes it. So it's just kind of like a branding thing. Okay. So yes, it does function similar to a sole prop. And Bula says, with the accountant, no, you'll have to bring it up. Not all accountants are going to think about this. It's not something that people think about. Accountants just do taxes. That's kind of what we're trained to do. Very few accountants think. So you want a thinker. You want somebody who's going to think about you, because the first thing I'm going to do is this part of step one, I'm going to see where you are. And then I'm going to think for you and then say, okay, here, we need to do this and save you taxes, because my number one thing is to save you taxes. But not everybody's going to do that. So.
And, you know, quick comment there, guys. I can totally attest to this. So for years prior to finding Deepa, you know, we had a different accountant. Like, oh my gosh, 20 years, 25 years. And I would ask him, like, okay, there's got to be a way, you know, there's got to be like some strategy to ease that tax burden a little bit. And I would even bring up, okay, what do you think about doing the S-corp route? And he said, do not do it. He's like, it's just going to cost you more. You're going to have to do all this bookkeeping. I don't do it. It's like, you know, it's just going to be so much extra work and blah, blah, blah. So not only do they not always recommend it, sometimes they just can't really wrap their minds around the benefit, which is really interesting.
Well, Leslie, more the reason why they do that is a lot of accountants don't want to do business. They just don't, because it's a lot more work. It's three times the cost because it's five times the work for us. From, you know, a sole proprietorship does not have as many requirements as the S-corp return. The S-corp return, I have to have a profit and loss and balance sheet before I can even start thinking about the return. For sole proprietor, you can write your numbers on a piece of paper and give it to me and I can do your return with that. So that's the difference in the volume of work. And a lot of accountants don't want to be bothered with that because it takes a couple years for me to make money on that return because of the amount of time I'm investing in it. And they don't want to be bothered with it. So that's why, but that doesn't make sense to the client. So, and that feels really
best interest. So I always thought erroneously that part of the accountant's job was to look at ways to help, you know, save your money, but clearly not so much.
Not always. And not a lot of the times. You definitely need somebody who specializes with businesses because, and you want them to be a business owner themselves. Like, I'm a business owner myself. I know how important it is for me to pay lower taxes. And so I'm gonna extrapolate that thinking out to you. Barbara says, can you easily transition from DBA to LLC using your business EIN? Barbara, I'm not sure that question is it's not making complete sense to me. A DBA does not have a tax ID. You only use a DBA like a brand identity. For example, let me give you, we all know Jimmy John's, right? So it could be ABC, it could be John Doe LLC, DBA, Jimmy John's sandwiches or subs or whatever. So that's really what a DBA is. It's more like a branding identity. It really has nothing to do with a tax ID. The tax ID is for the business name. So maybe you want to ask me that question in a different way. Willa says, so we need to have a conversation with them to see if they're thinking that way, looking out for you to save them. It does have to be the right fit. To me, this is such a personal relationship. I mean, I'm getting to know everything about your money stuff, your money habits. You've got to be comfortable with that person. I have so many women come to me saying it's easier to talk to, because we have all, you know, I work with Reiki practitioners and I work with energy healers. I mean, there's no shame around that. To me, it's fascinating that you have extra sensory perceptions that I can't even imagine. It's like you have a magic wand, you go to Hogwarts, as far as I'm concerned. And so I think that's awesome. And I'm going to ask you, hey, how do you do that? Can you please explain it to me? I'm fascinated by that. So my way of approaching somebody like that will be different. But when I talk to them, I hear so many of them say, well, a man shamed me. He asked me how on earth I made money doing that. So from that sense, I mean, this is not about man bashing, but it's just more about the perception. So I'm sure many of the friends do that too. It's not about man bashing them. It's the perception. So you definitely has to be the right fit. No shaming. It doesn't matter what you do, how you earn money. If you can earn money at doing what you do well, more power to you. That's the most important thing. So yeah, definitely has to be a very good fit from the top to the bottom across the board. Okay, so Barbara, it looks like you got that. Okay.
All right.
Oh, we went over. Wow. Well, this is an awesome group. There's so many great questions. So
yeah. Awesome. Thank you so much, Deepa. I learned a lot and I know everyone here did as well. So I just want to thank you very genuinely for sharing your time and expertise with myself and my group. We really appreciate it.
No, thank you for having me, Leslie.
And here's cheers to wealthy women, right?
Wealthy women, every single one of you. I need to see all your names everywhere doing great things.
That's right. Okay. All right, guys. So thank you again, Deepa. And all right. So I will see the rest of you tomorrow. All right. So look forward to it. Take care, everybody. Have a great rest of your day.
Bye.
Bye.